A trip into the great outdoors. Better to try and fail than not to try at all.
Jack reported in from near the broken windows on the eastern flank of the large room.
Nobody this side. Just a lot of snow.
Doc was still trying to read the daubed-over lettering.
I just can't make it out. It's so fearfully faded.
I'll open this door.
Rick heaved at the handle. He put all his frail weight against the rusted hinges. The door finally opened, letting in a dazzling shaft of morning light.
Hey, something's written on the door. Uncle Vanya sucks?
What's it mean? Sounds like a Rusky name.
My memory is not what it was, but I believe it was the nickname for the communist leader Stalin.
No. No, it's a play. Chekhov. It's the name of...
The bullet smashed into the door beside Rick Ginsburg, and he toppled into the hall flat on his back.
I trust that the behavior of my manservant has not inconvenienced you unduly.
The man shook his head. It made damnably little sense to him. He kept his thumb on the page and slowly read the phrase again.
I trust that the behavior of my manservant has not inconvenienced you unduly.
He closed the book and laid it on the scarred top of his desk. The cover was torn, but the title can still be read. The English Tongue for the Benefit of the Russian Gentleman Abroad. It would have been nice if he could have found a phrasebook that had been published a little nearer to the time that was called, in his country, the Long Grayness. In the frontispiece of the book was the date 1911. That was almost 200 years ago. But it was still better than nothing. He heard someone walking along the corridor outside his office, and he quickly slid the frail book into the center drawer of his desk and locked it. Though he could probably have formulated a defense for possessing it, he preferred to keep his arcane knowledge as secret as possible.
Enter!
The blonde, cropped head of Clerk Second Class Alisa Andreevna appeared around the wood-painted frame.
Forgive me, Major Commissar Zimyanin, for interrupting you.
Come in, Alisa Andreevna. What is it?
The secretary wore a plain skirt that fell just below the knee, in the dull maroon material that was the uniform color of Internal Security, Moscow.
A message from your wife, Anya, Major Commissar.
Yes?
It was common knowledge that all wasn't wonderfully well between Grigory Zimyanin and his tall, heavy-hipped wife. There were often angry calls on the telephone, generally ending with the receiver being slammed down, and some colorful cursing from the senior officer.
She wished to know what time you would be returning home tonight, sir.
By the anvil and the hammer. She knows I'm going to be late. I told her this morning over first food. I told her!
He remembered telling Anya, remembered her expression, remembered that she had mentioned something about an invitation they had for dinner to an apartment in the adjoining block. But he couldn't even recall the names. Some woman who had worked in the offices of pensions and domestic debts with Anya, who had a buck-toothed, stammering husband with a secret taste for decadent music. Zimyanin had arranged to have them investigated. You couldn't be too careful who you knew.
Can't be too careful.
Excuse me, sir?
I didn't mean to speak out loud, Alisa Andreevna. My apologies. Tell her, as softly as you can, that it will be after 11. And offer my deepest regrets that I must miss our last food date.
Yes, Major Commissar.
He managed a smile, though his wife's constant harrying was becoming increasingly tedious. The girl smiled back and withdrew, closing the door carefully behind her. Zimyanin leaned back, putting his high boots of tanned hide on his desktop. He had been married to Anya for only 6 weeks. It had only been 10 weeks since his promotion from plain major and his arrival at the center of the government, the spiritual and historical home of Mother Russia.
Anya, whatever shall I do with you?
Perhaps an accidental fall from the high balcony of their apartment. Perhaps a sudden seizure while she was in the bath. His strong fingers flexed at the thought, imagining how it would feel to close them around her soft, fleshy neck, pressing her with an inexorable power under the scummy water, eyes open, mouth open, tongue protruding, purpling, blackening. He drew out the phrasebook and flicked through, looking for the page he wanted. There it was.
I regret deeply that my lady wife will not be able to attend your soiree on account of her sudden indisposition.
The officer straightened, then buried himself in a pile of reports and documents. The spring thaw would soon begin to release the city from the clawed grip of General Winter. There would be much to do, work parties to enlist, and press into reluctant action. A thick red folder on a shelf across from the desk was marked with a single word, Subotnik. In the old days, Zemyanin knew from his researches, the citizens of Moscow would have to give up their free time to work for the city. This was Subotnik, the Saturday when you volunteer to help with manual labor. How things had changed. During the cleansing days of the Megakul, great swaths of Moscow had been laid into perpetual dust by the nuking missiles of the hated Americans. Little of the center had been rebuilt, but the suburbs survived, after a fashion. But there was so much to do. A century later, and there was always so much to be done. Subotniks now tended to refer to people snatched by armed patrols of Sekhmen and forced to perform the menial essential tasks. And the time of the spring thaw was the worst for that. The thought of the melting ice brought back a memory to the officer. Another phrase from his well-learned book.
I am delighted to have made your acquaintance.
He paused, his totally bald brow wrinkling with the effort of concentration.
But I do not believe we have been formally introduced.
They hadn't. But he could still see the face of the mysterious American across the frozen sea that nestled against the Kamchatka Peninsula and touched the land of the Americans in the region they called Alaska. It had been there, not far from a hamlet called Osbarchik, following the brutish killing band known as the Narodniki. Hozhenye Vinarod. It meant to be going to the people. The leader had been called Uchitul, remembered the officer, nodding his head. The teacher. That had been the name of the psychopathic slaughterer. It all came back now. The defeat of the Narodniki had been a triumph for Major Zemyanin, his passport away from the icy wasteland beyond the tumbled ruins of Yakutsk. He returned to Moscow with a promotion and thanks from the grateful party.
Americans.
He had never been sure how many there had been. Even with his precious Zeiss binoculars, he hadn't been able to make out their numbers, but he had seen the missile they had ready. That had all been reported to the central offices, an indication that the remnants of the United States weren't yet ready to fall into the hands of Russia. He'd met four of them face to face, a tall black man, a short fat man with the cold eyes of a born slayer, a woman, handsome, with the reddest, most fiery hair that Zemyanin had ever seen, and their leader.
I am desolated to see that you have been incapacitated by an accident, sir.
His gaze moved to the far wall of the small office, near the window, jammed with brown paper to stop it rattling in the winter gales. A rifle hung there on two rusting nails. His own weapon, an old SVD Dragunov sniper's blaster with a PSO-1 scope sight. It had been given to him by the marksman and his unit out east, Corporal Solomentsov, when Zemyanin had received his promotion. He ran a finger down the furrows of his pockmarked cheeks, thinking about that adventure and the blood that had flowed. His clerks